My name is Reed Lessing. Welcome to Lectionary at Lunch, as we have the privilege of exploring Zechariah 9, 9 through 12, the appointed Old Testament lesson for Palm Sunday, or the Passion of our Lord. Verse 9 in Zechariah 9, Gili me'od bat Zion hari'i bat Yerushalayim. Gil is our first imperative. It only appears in the call. That's helpful. So this can only be a call imperative, feminine singular, referring to Bat Zion. So rejoice greatly, the adverb Me'od, a daughter of Zion. And we're going to explore a little bit this imagery of daughter, Bat Zion, Bat Yerushalayim. A daughter is certainly entails someone who is weak, dependent on the father. Having two daughters of my own, I know they still are, to some extent, financially dependent upon me, still on the payroll. So daughters need a father. They're vulnerable, especially in the ancient Near East, right? They need protection and support and safety and a covering. So these are the people who are being called to rejoice. Would be daughters, a weak people, marginalized people. Certainly this is addressed initially to people in post-exilic Yehud in the late part of the 6th century B.C. So Hari'i, there's a hifil imperative from Ria, means a shout. In this case, shout victory. Because it's used in that way, for example, in Joshua 6, shout, for Yahweh has given you the city, that is Jericho. Quite often, Riah is used with a shofar, a ram's horn. And then why do this? Hine malkeik yavo lak. Hine plus an imperfect indicates something that is imminent. Malkeik. I have a second feminine singular object suffix there because I'm talking to, or Yahweh's talking to a female, Bat Zion, Bat Yerushalayim. Your king is coming to you, lock and pause. That's why I have a schwa in the final cough there. Tzaddik. Okay, so here we need to kind of park the car. Tzaddik. How do we understand this? Certainly righteous. It's the adjective, right, from the tzedek, tzedakah word group. In this context, I would take tzaddik as victorious and also as rightful. This is the rightful and victorious Melech, king, who is coming to you. Ve no shah, who, all of the versions kind of want to do something with this. For example, Septuagint, Zodzon, Vulgate, Salvator. They want to make it into something other than passive, which is what it is here. It's a Nifal participle, a masculine singular, referring back to the king. Victorious and rightful, tzaddik, and he is one being saved. Well, of course he's being saved, because no king can grant or attain victory on his own. He is given victory by Yahweh. So Psalm 33, verse 16, is a good reminder of this, where we have the same form. So if you turn to 11:14 in BHS, Psalm 33:16, Ein ha-melech nosha barav chayil gibor lo yinatzeil verav koach. There is not to a king being saved, there it is, by the greatness of strength or a warrior, a gibor, will not be snatched in the greatness of power. Every melech, every gibor, it needs to be saved, delivered, vindicated finally by Yahweh. Ani is the next line in Zechariah 9:9. Ani, how do we take this? Sometimes a poor, needy, the same form of this adjective comes as a verb, I believe, in the fourth servant song of Isaiah. So a beautiful matrixing of texts here, Isaiah 53 verse 4, where we have actually the last verb in Isaiah 53:4, ume uneh, this pu'al verb from anah, stricken by God and afflicted, quite often translated. So this king who's coming to you, he's rightful, tzaddik, he's victorious, he's being supported by Yahweh. He is afflicted. That's the point, especially as we lead the church into Holy Week with the triumphant entry into Jerusalem. This king who is coming to you imminently, he is afflicted, just like the servant in 53:4 of Isaiah. Vero cave al kamor, and riding upon an ass. Now, it won't do to say, you know, he should have been riding on a horse and an ass is humble, etc. That's just homiletical nonsense. We want to take the kamor much more nuanced than that. In Genesis 49, the messianic blessing is to Judah. And it involves a kamor. It also involves a ha'ir, which is the parallel idea in Zechariah 9, verse 9. So check out Genesis 49, 10, and 11. And a related text is Saul in 1 Samuel is narrated as retrieving asses. And this is probably an allusion to his future office as king. Kamor is what you would expect a king to be on, okay? And upon a ha'ir, a foal, a young ass, that is the son of asses, okay, or female asses. So there's not multiple animals that this melech, this king, is riding. He's on a young ass is how the parallelism is to be taken there. And what will he do? Vehik rati rekev me Ephraim. And he will cut, hifil there, he will cause to cut a rekev, a chariot from Ephraim. Ephraim and Jerusalem here stand for the entire promised land, Ephraim north, Jerusalem south, and a sus, me Yerushalayim, and a horse from Jerusalem. So this is what he's going to cut off. He is going to have the power and the authority to take on all military hardware, even the Rekav and Sus. And this takes us really back to 2 Kings 2 and 2 Kings 13, where Elijah is described as Rekav Yisrael u Parashav, the chariotry and the horses of Israel, as is Elisha in 2 Kings 13. So the real prophet, that is to say, is more powerful than chariots and horses. And so this king in Zechariah 9, verse 9. It goes on. Now we had the hifil of Karat in the first line. And then we have Vanik Rata Keshet Milkama. What will be cut off will be the keshet, the bow, of war. It's hard to say what the relationship between these two nouns are. Is this appositional? A bow slash a battle, or the bow of battle? I think most of the versions take it as a construct chain. The bow of war will be cut off. And what is the opposite of Rekev Sus and Keshet Milkama? Shalom is. Ve deber shalom la goyim. The goyim here, we can't help but see the universal implications of this. It's not the amim. It's not ami. It's not people or my people. It's for the goyim. Shalom. Shalom, this is the Sar Shalom, the Prince of Peace. And where he is present, people break bows into plowshares, spears into pruning hooks, right? All warfare, all animosity is gone for the nations. And continuing this universal idea, Mashal here, it means rule, reign. It also means to be like. But in this context, we'll take Mashal as reign. And his reign, his Mashal, here actually a noun with the object suffix vav holam, third masculine singular. And his realm, his reign, miyam ad yam, from sea to sea, is that from like... the Gulf of Aqaba to the Mediterranean Sea? Is this the Mediterranean Sea to maybe further east? It's kind of hard to say. The imagery here is imagery. It's imaginistic. Whatever seas are being talked of, we also have Ume Nahar. Now here Nahar is standing for the Nahar, the river, the Euphrates River, ad apse aretz, to the ends of the earth. Certainly an Isaianic motif that now Zechariah picks up. So this king is for everyone, Lagoim, and he extends his reign to the ends of the earth. You are never, ever, ever in a place where this king Shalom cannot and will not reach out and find you and gather you, is the point. Shalom does not mean the absence of warfare. It means the presence of God's restoration kingdom. Shalom is almost, in some texts, like in Joel 2:26, means to restore. Speaking restoration to the nations, we could almost do that. Well, then the text continues into verse 11. Gam at, even you. Again, we have a second feminine singular, independent personal pronoun. At, not ata. Ata would be a masculine. This is feminine. So the direct address is still to the poor, vulnerable daughters of Zion and Jerusalem. Bedam beri take. The only other place in the Old Testament where you've got dam plus berit is throughout Exodus 24, 3 through 8. So even you, by means of a blood of your covenant, pretty elliptical phrase here, but the blood of your covenant, beri take, certainly is to take us back to the covenant Moses cut and sprinkled upon the people in Exodus chapter 24. And he poured half of the blood upon the altar. So how is this kingdom actually going to function? It's going to function through blood, the blood of dead animals, pointing to the Lamb of God, right? Shalakti, here's a peal. I will send forth Asi Reich, your prisoners, Mibor Ein Mayimbo. From a pit there is not water in it. And the only two people in the Hebrew Bible who were in waterless pits would be Joseph in Genesis 37 and Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 38. A very hopeless situation when you're thrown in a waterless pit. In both circumstances, the idea was to kill Joseph and to kill Jeremiah. Yet in both circumstances, both were delivered. So this actually might be a new homiletical way of going about a very well-known text, right? Picture being in a waterless pit. How's that working out for you? How desperate does that feel? Well, this king is coming for you, daughter Zion. So daughter Zion, daughter Jerusalem, it is as though these daughters are in a waterless pit. They're prisoners. They're trapped. But a king is coming, and he's going to have blood with him, right? So then the text concludes, a shuvu. Here, as it stands, this is a call imperative, masculine plural from shuv. So return, levitz aron. This is a hapax legomenon, translated variously as stronghold or fortress. So return to a fortress, asire hatikva, the prisoners of hope. So a fortress is a whole lot better than a waterless pit, right? They're still called prisoners of a tikva. Their kava is the very frequent PL root for wait or hope. Isaiah 40:31 comes to mind. Those who wait on Yahweh will renew their strength, etc. So in this case, ha tikva. Would be the prisoners of hope who are waiting expectantly. Gam hayom magid, even today one is declaring, even now, for the present congregation who is the daughter, who's in the waterless pit, who's trapped and stuck, even today this is being declared. Magid, you, O pastor, are the one magiding, right, declaring. This hifil participle from the God. Mishneh ashiv lak. Double I will restore to you. Oh my, what a double. This same word, mishneh, using shuv and the cognate noun, shavut, appears, for example, in Job chapter 42. And I'll give you the exact verse here, because I don't recall it off the top of my head. I think it is verse 12, and I'm wrong. It's verse 10, of Job 42. So what does it look like to have a Mishneh restored? To give people a picture, a narrative of that, you need only to go to the book of Job, who loses everything, and then it's restored double-fold. This is, of course, a comfort, my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. And it goes on in Isaiah 40, verse 2, that she has received double for all her sins. Double what? Double comfort. Comfort in verse 1. My cup overflows. And that's what this king has come to bring. This victory. For those who have nothing else, I'm reminded of Zechariah 4, verse 7. You see, it's not by might, and it's not by power, but it's by Yahweh's Spirit. It's not by our might or our power, but here in our text, it's by Yahweh's King. Tzadik ve-noshahu, the right king, the victorious king, and how do we know he's victorious? Because he is yeshad, he is helped, he's delivered by Yahweh. God's blessings to you as you unpack this marvelous text for the people of God.